Before we jump in, I gotta say this. If this is the year that you finally become an investor instead of just talking about it, go grab my free first deal confidence kit at kersnergroup.com. It's a simple step-by-step roadmap that shows you what you need to focus on first, what to ignore, and how to build momentum in the next 90 days. It's free, it's practical, and it will get you moving. Now, let's dive into today's episode. If you've been thinking about buying your first investment property, but you keep hesitating because you don't want to make a costly mistake, this episode is for you. Today, I am going to walk you through a clear, high-level path that new investors actually follow when they move from thinking about real estate to confidently owning their first rental. My name's Greg Kersner, and I want to welcome you to the Real Estate Launchpad podcast. I've been in real estate for over 35 years as an investor, broker, builder, and coach, and I've watched one pattern that repeats itself over and over. Almost everyone that I talk to wants to own investment real estate, but a lot actually don't. And here's what I noticed. People don't get stuck because they're incapable. They get stuck because no one has ever showed them a step-by-step process, what they need to know, what isn't critical the first time out, and how to approach investing with a who, not how, mentality. So today is going to be a 30,000-foot roadmap. No tactics, no hype, just clarity. Today's episode is how to buy your first rental property. We're going to give you a clear path to make that happen in 90 days or less. I've had the opportunity to work with all sorts of investors. I've had doctors and engineers, executives. They're all very capable and intelligent people. And they stayed on the sidelines of investing and building wealth for years. Not because they lacked intelligence, but because real estate feels big. It feels permanent. And permanent decisions can trigger fear. What helps isn't more information. What helps is seeing a path and seeing that real people walk that path safely every single day. Today, we're going to answer the question of how to buy your first rental property. I'm going to do this in six easy steps, a simple step-by-step process that you can use to get going today. So let's start with step one. Decide what your first deal is meant to do. This may seem obvious, but most investors rarely stop to consider what they hope to accomplish by investing for the first time. Your first investment property has to have a very specific job. It doesn't need to be impressive. It does not need to be a home run. And it doesn't need to change your life overnight either. Its job is to turn you into an investor. Look, I love scuba diving. I went diving last month down in Key Largo. I don't worry about the fear of what could happen if I panic or what lurks below the surface because I've done this dozens of times. I can tell you that the first time I did it, those things were all I worried about. Investing for the first time is kind of like that. Until you have become an investor, it's all just theory, and there's a lot of worry and uncertainty and fear. You need to focus on your beliefs that might be holding you back much more than the things like cap rate, cash on cash return, or finding the perfect property. Going from zero investment properties to one isn't so much about nuts and bolts or how to do things. It's about changing your mindset from, I can't do this, to, I did it. I bought my first investment property. So when you sink down 80 feet of water for the first time, you are much more focused on overcoming the fear of the unknown than on all the technical parts of the dive. There are lots of things that are a little scary for the first time. But once you've done them, they seem like they're on the other side of the bridge. And then that fear of the unknown is gone, and you can focus on repeating and improving your process. I recently worked with somebody who felt like they had to hit a home run on their first deal to ensure that they didn't fail. And they were afraid of being embarrassed or financial hardship. This gentleman was really concerned that if things didn't go well, his spouse would be upset and he would lose money. And he looked at every deal, deal after deal after deal, and he always found some way of talking himself out of it. He passed on so many good properties, and a year later, he hadn't bought anything. He kept waiting for the next bus to arrive, and while it's going to show up, it keeps delaying your arrival at your desired destination. I had another client, a young gentleman, and you have to love young people for their lack of fear. Well, anyway, he bought a small, boring rental property that had pretty good numbers and very solid bones. 5 years later, he has bought his second property, and he is not looking back. Remember this, momentum beats perfection every time. Okay, so before I move to step two, I want to restate the key point of step one, deciding what your first deal is meant to do. Remember, your first deal needs to equal learning and momentum. Okay, so I have a little exercise for you. This is going to drive home the point. However, if you are driving while you're listening to this, obviously don't try to do this while you're in traffic. Okay, so here's your first assignment. Write one sentence. My first property's job is to blank. And choose one priority. Is it learn the process, produce a modest cash flow, or build equity safely? Define what that looks like to you in a 12 to 18 month timeline. We're not trying to figure out lifetime outcomes at this point. Your first deal is not your retirement plan. It is literally your entry ticket. So the first deal honestly should be much more focused on reducing your uncertainty than in producing wealth. And remember also that experience compounds much faster than your profits do your first time out. But what does grow is your investor's identity. And that is what I'm really looking for more than anything else. For you to go from I'm not an investor to I am an investor. And that mindset changes everything from here on out. Okay, so let's go to step two. And step two is more nuts and bolts. This is what I call defining your buy box. One of the biggest stress relievers in real estate is a buy box. So if you aren't familiar with what that term means, basically just means that it's the specific criteria that you're going to use to search for and buy. Things like price range, location, minimum return on investment, the age of a property, is it a single family home or a multifamily property, the condition, all of that kind of stuff. I remember I had a new investor who told me every house feels like a maybe. Well, that's because he didn't have a solid idea of what he was looking for and he couldn't focus on it. It's like 32 flavors ice cream dilemma. It's exhausting and completely unnecessary. If you have a well-defined buy box, you can quickly find properties that fall in that box and analyze them while you're not burning up time on properties that aren't even going to be things you want to buy. If time is a constraint, remember, once you've defined your price range and area, property type and condition, about 90% of these potential properties that you're looking for are going to become easy no's. Having the clarity doesn't limit you. It actually protects you. So let's explore a little bit more of how we define your buy box. If you can, write down these five things: price range, target area, and for this discussion, just include maybe two or three zip codes maximum. Property type. So we're talking about, is it a single family home, a duplex, quadruplex, a condominium, et cetera. So we know what kind of property type we're looking for. And then condition level. So are we only looking for things that are kind of rent ready, or are we willing to do a little light rehab, or are we willing to do a little bit more rehab? So condition level is your fourth. And then your fifth is rent range expectations. You know, where do we think this property is going to fall within range? So here's a practical tip. If a property that you're looking for falls outside two of these five criteria, it's got to be an automatic no. Having a buy box that you stick to helps you reduce the emotional decision-making. I have bought properties because I really, really wanted them, and they weren't exactly checking all of the boxes. I drove past several red flags because I was emotionally attached to owning this one property. And I ended up getting it and also getting what I didn't want. if you know what I mean. I have a client who wanted to look at literally everything in his price range. And I set him up on a search, and at least twice a day, he would call me and he would text me and he would say, well, this looks interesting. What about this one? And that quickly spiraled into overwhelm. The key point here is that a buy box doesn't really reduce your opportunities. It removes a lot of noise. So be disciplined and set up your buying criteria. Look at only the properties that mostly match. And if you can't find anything that works, slowly and deliberately expand your buy box until you do find opportunities. Okay, we've covered why you are buying and using a buy box to narrow down your options. So next, let's go to step three, and that's about getting funding clarity. Unless you're going to buy a property investment with cash and you have that sitting in the bank or a HELOC or some other funding that isn't tied to a mortgage, you're going to need a loan when you purchase. I've seen people that look at dozens of properties before they even talk to a lender, and that is actually the complete opposite approach than what you should be doing. You really need to have your funding set up and in hand, or at the very least, a pre-approval or a clear idea of what you can afford and the costs of that funding before you really start looking in earnest. Without this information about your qualifications for a loan, you might not know what your price range is or what the cost of debt is. A perfect example, I had a client who felt very confident that he could get any loan he wanted. And when the time came, it would be really quick and easy. So we went out and looked at properties, and then he found one. He fell in love with this deal, and only to realize that the agent that was representing this seller wouldn't even entertain an offer without verifying his finance. It was a weekend and he couldn't get a hold of his lender and get pre-approved in time. And unfortunately, the house sold to somebody else who already had that in hand. In another case, I had a client who was buying their second investment property. So they weren't rookies. And this house needed a lot more work than the original home that they bought. But since they had already purchased an investment property, they thought, well, buying the second one is going to be a lot like buying the first one with the typical loan that we got. Well, what they found out was that this home, based on its condition, really wasn't going to be financeable with that conventional finance. So they ended up scrambling around to try to find alternative financing at the very last minute. That created a lot of stress and angst that didn't need to happen. Those were good learning lessons for both of these investors. Once they understood the funding options and the need to have that part handled, their decisions became calmer and faster. So starting out, you don't need to have every loan option. You just need to know which lane you're in. So to hammer this point home again, get your funding clarity early. Before we move to step four, building your team of professionals, I want you to reach out to one lender this week. And by the way, your lender is one of your key team members, so you're not jumping ahead. Ask if they are investor friendly. And if not, see if they can refer you to somebody who is. Here are the four things to ask them once they have given you the information or taken your application. What is my price range? You know, what can I qualify for? What expected down payment am I going to need to come up with in cash? Can you give me an idea what my expected closing costs are going to be? And finally, what are the specific rental property loan requirements if they're different than kind of typical owner-occupant home requirements? This is where most capable people start to slow down. This is one of those very first points in this goal and future vision that turns into reality that a lot of people hesitate on, the applying for financing stage. It just seems like this is one of those blockers that people go from the theory of investing to the reality of it and pause. So I want you to put your mind at ease and remember that investors do not need to have perfect credit. You don't need to have huge capital money in the bank. Most people are much closer to investing and having what they need to invest than they think. And remember that if you apply for a loan and then you end up not going through with it, there's very little impact to applying. At most, maybe 2 or 3 points off your credit score for the credit pull. That's it. So don't let that be the blocker that keeps you on the sidelines. You know, in my prior story, I mentioned that there was a buyer who got attached to this house before he nailed it down. I had another investor who followed the process. He got clear on what he could afford, what his costs were going to be, and came equipped with that information so that every property that he looked at, he knew right away if he could get it, if he could finance it, if it was going to work for him. That gave him a calm and a decision-making that made all of this very easy. Okay, so I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dive into step four, building your real estate investing team. Okay, now let's get into who, not how portion of the podcast. So step four is about building out your investor professionals team. We do this before you go shopping. Real estate investing, remember, does not start by a search on Zillow. It starts with putting together your team, building your people. I've seen lots of new investors get terrible advice from well-meaning friends who have never owned rentals. Remember, you need experience and expertise that's beyond yours. The good news is that there are plenty of real estate professionals and related that can help you and that you can leverage. I do about 3 or 4 calls a week with new investors, and I can sense their immediate relief once we talk because they connected with an investor-savvy agent, and they can relax now that they feel like they don't have to know everything. You're looking for an agent and a lender who start with, here's how we usually do this. And that is what's going to put you at ease because the right voices make uncertainty feel manageable. I want to talk about the 4 key professionals that you really need to assemble before you get rolling. So obviously the first one and the most important is your investor experience agent. That agent is going to be able to help you through the vast majority of the transaction and help you also integrate a lot of the complementary professionals you may need along the way. So in addition to your investor experienced agent, you need an investor-friendly lender. So there are a lot of people that lend money, and a lot of them are very fixed in the box of owner-occupant financing. But to find an investor-friendly lender is really going to be important because they are familiar with the different types of loans that you might be able to qualify for, based not only on your credit and your financing, but also on the particular property itself. So there is a difference, and I suggest both with the agent and with the lender that you find investor experienced ones. Another one that's really becoming very important now is your insurance contact. Remember that you're not getting homeowners insurance per se, you're getting landlord insurance or investment property insurance, and it is slightly different. It's going to be probably more expensive, and you need to make sure that it covers you on vacant properties, on rented properties. So having a good insurance contact that is not only affordable, but that protects you with the right type of insurance is very important. And then finally, I think for most people, the inspector becomes the needed 4th professional, because when you buy a property, especially as a new investor, you're not going to know all of the things that might be wrong with it. So having an inspector do a thorough property inspection can help you identify if this is a go or no-go, what things really need to be repaired, what things can probably wait, and how you proceed with negotiating those items. Don't fall into the trap of fear of asking stupid questions. We all ask stupid questions, and that's how we get knowledge. First-time investors often rely on friends who mean well, but they lack experience. And using professionals that will help you sort out all of the things you need. Remember, these professionals generally are going to earn some kind of compensation through your transaction, whether it's a brokerage fee, whether it's a lending fee, a fee to prepare the property inspection, etc. So don't feel bad about leveraging them. Remember this key point: real estate is a team sport, even for small investors. Often, if you find an investor-savvy agent first, they can connect you with a lot of their go-to team members. They have lenders and inspectors, contractors, lots of others that they can help pass along to you and you can use. If you have only one team member to start with, your agent needs to be that one team member. All right. Once we have the team built, now we're ready to start looking at opportunities. And that's when we arrive at step 5. How to filter deals instead of overanalyze. One of the most common fears that all investors have, not just the new ones, is buying the wrong property. To prevent this, experienced investors don't predict, they filter. What do I mean by that? Well, I've watched new investors talk themselves out of solid deals just because they are searching for the certainty instead of the safety. Ask yourself or your agent these questions. Do I think I can rent this quickly? Does my payment of the loan and my operating expenses roughly work with my conservative rent estimate? Is the repair scope understandable and affordable? And would a typical renter want to rent this property? Early investing is probability management, not perfection. Remember this, filtering protects you against analysis paralysis. Remember that you'll have to make decisions without complete information. It is so tempting to be too cautious, and by sticking to your buy box and filtering, you'll balance that fear of screwing up with your need to take the action and get going. Set up a set of filters and ask yourself on each property that you evaluate if they check the box. Don't overthink these and don't ignore them. If they allow your property to make it through the filter, you should pursue it. Here's the best takeaway for this. Don't try to predict the future. Use your filtering and your team's input to avoid any obvious mistakes. Okay, so we finally arrived at the last step for today, and that is step 6, trust the process, not the emotion. So if you've made it to this point, you push through the first big hurdle, which is applying for financing. And the second, equally as big hurdle, connecting with professionals to help you accomplish the mission. Now, the real friction point tends to appear, and this is the moment that a lot of people turn sideways on. That's making the offer. It's very emotional for almost everybody. I've had clients tell me that their heart was racing when they hit the send button. But here's what matters. Offers don't lock you in. The inspections protect you. Due diligence gives you exits. Confidence does not come from fearlessness. It comes from understanding the process and navigating through it. There are several guide rails that you and your agent can build in to protect you once you make the offer and hopefully negotiate it to acceptance. First, you'll likely need to have contingencies. So what are contingencies? Well, those are things that if you don't clear them, your contract terminates. So inspection is obviously one contingency. If you do an inspection and you don't like the results, you can terminate the agreement. Financing is a contingency. If for some reason, after you've pre-approved, the lender decides you're not a good risk or they won't make the loan, then you can get out of the contract because you can't arrange financing. Due diligence is the big one, and that's where you have the ability and the right to inspect the property and do all kinds of research about it. Check the HOA, check with the city, zoning, all of the things that you need to do to make sure that the property checks the boxes. One very important one is, are there any HOA restrictions preventing me from renting this property if I wanted to rent it? The ability to negotiate these gives you that out. So if you can't negotiate things after your inspection or things that pop up on due diligence, then you can terminate your agreement. If you think about it like this, offers begin the conversation. They don't finalize your commitment. I have a short listener exercise. Write this down. My job is not to eliminate fear. My job is to follow the process. I cannot tell you the number of times that I've had a new investor look at me at some point in this process and ask me, is this a good deal? Am I making the right decision? I want to suggest that you need to really seriously lean on your team of professionals for advice and counsel. They have been there and done that, and they can answer your questions, address your concerns, and hopefully put your mind at ease. So lean on them. Okay, so before we wrap up today, I thought it would be fun to do a quick timeline exercise to show you what your first 60 days usually looks like as a new investor. And in our typical schedule in our Launchpad coaching program, we go weeks 1 and 2 about clarity and lender conversation. So that's our focus. Get clear on what you want, get clear in your buy box, and reach out and get that lender conversation going. Weeks 2 to 4 is about refining the buy box, building our team, and locking our financing down. Weeks 3 through 6 are about property review rhythm, just starting to look at deals and getting familiar with how to analyze. Weeks 4 through 8 are about when we first make offers. Now we've got some properties to look at. Now we're going to start making offers on them. And weeks 6 through 10 are about contract and inspections, closing, funding, and all the post-closing things that happen in weeks 11 and 12, leasing and management and rinsing and repeating. Okay, so if you take nothing else from this episode away, remember this. People who succeed in real estate, they aren't braver than you. They're clear. They follow a path. They keep things simple as possible, and they don't try to do everything at once. If you're new to investing and trying to figure out where you are on this path, I've put together a short quiz that helps you identify exactly what's holding you back and what you need to do next. Go to KirshnerGroup.com and take this 45-second quiz. It's simple, it's easy, and you'll have that clarity. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about how much money you really need to get started and why that question keeps so many people stuck longer than they need to be. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. It helps us find and reach more aspiring investors just like you. Thanks for listening, and remember, you are just one deal away from financial freedom. So if you're serious about taking action and making real estate work for you, tune into the Real Estate Launchpad podcast, where we help new and aspiring investors take off. I'm your host, Greg Kirshner, and I will see you next time. Remember to hit the subscribe button, and let's get started building your financial freedom, one deal at a time. Thanks for being here today. If you're serious about building wealth through real estate, make sure you subscribe because every episode is part of the roadmap. And if this helped you, please leave a rating or better yet, a review so other future investors can find the show. And if you're ready to surround yourself with people who are actually moving forward, join our Real Estate Launchpad community on Facebook. You'll find it in groups at RE Launchpad. And we'll see you next week as we take the next step forward on the Real Estate Launchpad podcast.